I missed the personal appointments.
Once again, can I ask what the audio devices that the...
You know, I'm as in the dark as you are, Mr. Camacho. She wanted to bring him in, and I didn't object, and...
I already instructed you, Mr. Abrams, once again, but when the witnesses approach the table and sit down, they are not to have any documents with them.
Well, these aren't documents.
The items be presented to the other parties before and they're presented in evidence. The second time I've asked you.
Well, excuse me, Mr. Camacho.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, these are not documents. Number two,
mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'm going to offer them into evidence. Number three, I'll be glad to take them off of the table and put them onto my table if it'll make things better.
I'm sorry, my throat's a little scratchy about yelling at you. It doesn't sound that way when I'm trying to...
Well, you do sound irritated, I must admit. It's not my purpose to irritate anyone.
No, I'm trying to say that I'm not meaning to sound irritated. I have a slight cold.
Your throat's irritated. You know,
that's
too bad. Okay, then.
I'll have to record the fact that they went into the well signing in, and that the witness will be sworn in. Yep.
Please state your name and full, please.
My name is Colette Grace Bosalette.
Could you raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And, I know this was the way you hear our discussion. Please advise the hearing officer what the equipment that she brought in is for.
Okay, good.
Please talk to me, please.
That's an example of probeware. And so when that term is used, people may have some other ideas as to what that implies. So basically, when we talk about our labs, that's just to show people an example of what that equipment looks like so they can envision it.
I'm just trying to confirm, it's not a device that you need to give us your testimony to get, is that correct? That you physically need to rely upon for you to give your testimony to us today. It's not such a device.
Well, I was asked to come here to testify. I'm a physics teacher, and so the testimony I will be providing today relates to the conditions of the science department, and that's one of the components we use. So I guess I'm not clear what your question is.
Oh, I'm just making sure that you don't have some physical condition that requires some additional equipment for you to give your testimony.
No, that should be sufficient.
Thank you. Okay, Ms. Raven? Oh, can you please spell your name for the record?
My full name?
Yeah, say your full name. Please spell your last name correctly.
My full name is Colette Grace Beausoleil. Colette Grace Beausoleil.
Thank you, Ms. Beausoleil. Mr. Edward Jordan.
Ms. Beausoleil, what
are you doing for living right now? I'm teaching physics at John F. Kennedy High School.
And for how long have you been teaching at the, which facility is that, at Teaching?
Yes, sir.
And for how long have you been teaching there?
At Teaching?
Yes.
Since the school began, September, I returned to Ireland first week in September. My mother passed away August, so September.
Okay. And before the Teaching facility, where did you teach?
We were teaching at the GW campus.
And before that?
At the John F. Kennedy campus in Tumon.
Okay. In your teaching activities now, are you able to do everything that you would like to do in terms of educating your students?
Not everything I would like to do. I'm limited in terms of the physical facilities and the amount of equipment that I can bring in and use in classroom. Certainly, the converted barracks that we're in are not designed to be a school, let alone a physics classroom that's designed for 21st century education.
In what way is the education of your students compromised by the existing conditions? Be specific, please.
The first factor that I would state would have to be with the dimensions of the room. They're inadequate, and I have had various explanations as to why the sizing is what it is, but it is certainly inadequate. I have 28 desks, student desks, that are in the room. In addition to that, I need to place 15 computers. I've only been able to put up about 7, I believe, at this point. They are around the perimeter of the room. That leaves approximately 6 feet between the desk where the computer sits and where the student desks are. To move the 28 kids around, I'm sure that if it were examined, there might be issues with egress. I'm not an expert on that, but it perhaps should be investigated. And again, in order to teach, we need to have our computers. This is not physics when I was in school in the 1970s. It's physics for the 21st century. And I'm proud to state that Ben and I have worked very hard to bring in equipment. Several years back, I got a Citibank grant for $15,000 to begin the technology component. And we furthered that with additional monies that we obtained through a grant, approximately $30,000 of hardware. And that state-of-the-art technology for teaching sciences also answers. We currently have it for the chemistry and physics department. And the students have not been able to use that to the extent they could if we had space. One of the things that limits it, in addition to the physical space in the classroom, is storage. We've been denied, and that is the correct term, the capacity to secure our equipment in a room to which no one has access but us. And when I say us, I mean Dana Figueroa, the principal, and myself.
How is that important?
It's important because we have a variety of pieces of equipment, like that yellow graphing calculator that's sitting there is about $150. That's what that's going to run. Ideally,
I don't know, let the record reflect that the witness is pointing to the electronic piece of equipment that is from Mr. Edmonds that we discussed earlier.
So just the yellow part on top of that system over there is around $150.
So you're saying that there are valuable pieces of electronic equipment that cannot be safely or securely stored, is that correct?
The way they can be stored is in a filing cabinet, which just a good screwdriver will pry the lock off. There's no security in that. We had double deadbolts. Mrs. Figueroa and I had gone to extensive lengths to protect our equipment through the years, and so we had that all battened down with double deadbolts in our prior facility, and we were able to minimize access to other people. The reason I bring the calculator up is students need that type of calculator if they're taking advanced math in today's high schools, and it's a desirable object to have.
Well, how can you can't use it?
Oh, I can use it, but I can't secure that safely during...
So the students can use it?
They can use the calculator. If there are certain pieces of Probware that can be used in the space I have and certain pieces that cannot.
What cannot be used?
The larger pieces of equipment. For instance, large motion ramps, when I want to set those up. Or my wind tunnel, which is... if you look at the front table up here and start on this end and go back about to where Mrs. Floyd's books is. It's not that long.
Not that I can reflect it's approximately 6 feet.
Yeah. And the diameter is about 2 feet on either end of that thing. Okay. So trying to maneuver that into the room is a problem. One, storing it, and two, maneuvering it into the room and also have other equipment going. So I'm limited as to what I can bring in and use.
Do you use the wind tunnel?
We do use the wind tunnel.
So is there anything that's not being used?
When you say, do I use it, have I used it historically? Am I using it now? No.
Oh,
have I used it historically? Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, are you using it in terms of your instruction on a day-to-day basis or when you need to use it?
You use it when you cover that particular topic.
So it is being used at the teaching facility?
No, it's not being used.
Okay, that's right.
It is currently stored at the John F. Kennedy facility in an unair-conditioned environment.
So you have state-of-the-art equipment, such as the wind tunnel, such as the computers, but is it as good as any equipment on the island, this electronic gear?
The equipment we have for our lab exceeds any school, and that includes the private schools in terms of our capacity.
Can you use 50% of it, or 60%, or 40%? Can you estimate that?
I would be uncertain of the exact extent of that. We're currently experiencing air conditioning difficulties at the facility, so none of it's in use. And I was assured that the air conditioning would be functional this afternoon. So I'm wary of venturing a guess on that. I hate to.
Let's say that the air conditioning was functioning. Would you be able to use all of the electronic state-of-the-art equipment that you mentioned, or just some of it?
Again, once we have a place where we can store things like the wind tunnel, like this other equipment, where we can store it, lock it up, and no one's going to run out with it. And again, we don't want the tunnel, it's the components to go with that. So what percentage? What am I going to say, 60% perhaps, 70%?
Used or unused?
But we could use probably 60%.
That you're using now?
I'm not using it now. Again,
right,
there are issues with the air conditioning currently in my classroom.
Okay, but once the air conditioning is fixed?
Probably 60% based on the space limitations we have.
You'd be using 60%?
Yes.
Okay. And 40% you would not be able to use to educate the children, is that correct?
Approximately.
Okay, what equipment or what gear would that be, the 40% that you couldn't use?
Well, you're basically looking at items that are, again, costly and not storable in a safe location there. And these can be gauges, certain types of gauges and so forth that are useful. And so, how much of that am I going to be able to secure? Asking that to foretell the future, I do not know what's going to happen there. I'm just basing it right now on what I can secure in the cabinetry I have. We're looking at about that percentage of it.
Well, let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the ideal educational experience for a physics class and 0 being nothing. What kind of education are you able to deliver as a physics teacher on a scale of 1 to 10?
Well, on a physics on a scale of 1 to 10, I give 110% of my effort every day. What the children are being denied is access to the technologies of the 21st century that they need. I started teaching on Guam 21 years ago at Inarahan High School. It was Papa Nick's High School because we had no equipment. So when we ask, what am I compromising? I'm compromising my capacity, my professional capacity, to deliver the absolute maximum instructional facilitation.
How much less are the kids getting at teaching than they would get in the ideal situation? And they're getting 30% less, 40% less? What would
is it 40% perhaps?
Okay. Yeah, we're ballparking now.
Yeah, I mean, I really am wary because I am a numbers person all the way around, and so when I'm asked for a number, You need to be, I need to know exactly what you're referring to, because I don't like to hypothesize about things that I really am not certain about. So I'm trying to be very certain to tell you they are limited. You're asking a percent limitation, and we're looking at about 40%. I provide instruction. It is not what it should be for this day and age for these students. And their capacity is phenomenal when they get hooked onto this stuff. And those things communicate, those pieces of equipment you're looking at, the motion detector, that hooks into a computer. They upload the data, they graph it, they convert it into Word files, they move things. It's phenomenal what they can do.
So the sooner,
and they don't get to do that, and they're not doing that yet.
So the sooner we get into a school with adequate facilities, the better. Would you say that?
I would certainly agree to that.
Okay. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes,
Mr. Oh, no questions, except I used to have to use a slide rule.
And then,
it was like, it looked pretty cool.
I give them a hard time about their calculus, but they've got those. It's not even worth anymore.
I just would like to ask a witness, when you say 40%, I'm just going to clarify that, because you're getting 40%...
Reduction.
Reduction. So
right.
Not able, just on infinitesimal, to provide 40% of the assumption you otherwise could, you may keep it at that.
Right, if we had... if we had ample space. And one thing I would like to add on this, we got hung up on one type of lab. There are four types of labs I do, and if I have the opportunity, I would like to explore that, because we've spoken about 40% of essentially one-fourth of my labs.
Okay,
it's important to understand what we were talking about with probeware.
Okay, but generally, you're
saying that... I'll go through it. I'll parse it for you, and then we can sum it.
I'm trying to understand your prior testimony. You said, okay, 40%, that's not... Okay, it's 40% of your instructional, or what you instruct, is not... Or, excuse me, phrase it. You can't perform 40% of your instruction at your current teaching location.
Correct. With that particular equipment, that's what we're looking at. Okay, because there are other types of labs,
mm-hmm.
and there's one that will have 0%, and that's the robotics.
When you say that particular equipment, what equipment are you referring?
The probeware.
Thank you.
The other three-fourths of the lab component, I think, should be at least explored here, or I should present what that means. The robotics curriculum, I was sent off island for training on robotics to the U.S. first competition in Honolulu last year, and being tasked with establishing robotics on Guam. And John F. Kennedy High School is supposed to be a starter school for that, and I'm supposed to be the lead teacher for that. And that is totally unable to happen in this current facility. There is absolutely no space for that. And I made that very clear to my principal upon my return to Guam in the first week of September. What's going to happen with robotics? Where am I supposed to put it? There's no place for it.
Would that require a separate design classroom?
It needs the size room I had at JFK at the bare minimum, and I've shared with him JFK was good for the other three types of labs, and now we're putting a fourth component in, which is the robotics curriculum. And the robots are not small. We're not talking microbots. We're talking big robots, 120-pounders, you know, that look like refrigerators. I mean, they're large objects that are moving, and there's a lot of work that goes into that, the programming and so forth, so there needs to be additional computer capacity in conjunction with that. And that is currently not, there is no possibility of doing that in the current facility.
Have you had a chance to look at the design of the physics classrooms at Oakley?
Yes, I went to Oakley High School with Mrs. Sibylon last year. I believe it was on Columbus Day, because we had weather off and we had a make-up day, if I remember correctly. And we had heard many stories about the facility, and we made arrangements to go up there and look at the science rooms in particular, and to get an idea of what the situation was. And in fact, Mrs. Leon had brought the design to me prior to this, prior to the actual build out on it, and she was showing the science rooms. And there were only four, if I remember right, and I thought that was in one pod the day before and forth, right? Because this was a large school. And when we got there, I said, Dana, there were only four rooms, and they divided them in half. And she said, yeah, they didn't build enough. She said, remember I showed you the plans? I said, I thought that was just for one pod. I didn't realize that was for the entire school. And so we got there, and the way the room was designed, they were long rooms, and they were designed with a lecture area in one end and a lab area at the other end. And we noted many inadequacies. In fact, we took notes about all the things that were problematic. And it was Dana who actually gave some input before the building was completed on the fact that they had not included eyewash stations and showers within the chemistry room, which is required for safety purposes in case there's a burn with acid. They didn't have eyewash or a shower station in there, and they also had not piped it for gas. Those were after the fact. They had to go back and redo that. Right, there was nothing really there for physics. It was basically the physics and the biology rooms looked very much they were very similar in nature, if you know what I'm saying. They had a chemistry lab set up. But the other three rooms were essentially designed in the same layout, roughly the same layout. The chem lab had a specific set, you know, of tables and whatnot. And that's not what you want in a physics lab. And again, with the movement into virtual labs, probeware, computer-based labs, there's a huge shift in how you design science classrooms, and we didn't see that exemplified in the model. What we saw was a traditional, more of a traditional type layout without any space really for computers, and she had a classroom set of computers also when we were at our old school, and certainly no space for that. You had the conventional tables for doing the conventional lab work. In the physics room, what we would need would be, again, lots of space for those for computers to be spaced around the perimeter, in addition to having a central area where you would have movable pieces of equipment and furniture, and also laptops that you can bring into that zone and work with it, and of course the program, that kind of thing. So that school did not have, specific tableware set up, in an arrangement that would be conducive to a physics classroom of the 21st century.
So are you aware that the new character is being designed to be generic?
I hope that that's not the...
I'll read from the chemistry and physics building, that's for the annex building between annex building and sidewalk. And I'm reading again from the RFP that was put out by DPW. Design this science building to mirror opening chemistry and physics classrooms. Then under the physics classroom, there's classroom lab within the classroom and storage room, and that's it. That's the overall first bullet point of the chemistry and physics classroom. So,
problematic. Again, we're more than willing to meet with people and discuss our concept for what the ideal room would look like. That's not a problem for us. And they say a lab, well, if we stop right there and don't start bolting desks and putting plumbing in and all these things, we're going to be in better shape. But to move forward with some architectural concept that mirrors that opening model, we're going to have problems. And I would much prefer to be, and I say this every day, I wish I was at my JFK classroom, not because I had the best view of the island, or on the island, or anywhere in America, but strictly because I had a big, empty, open space. And I had scrounged tables to work in there, to set it up, to have it work, and it was a functional lab. And we did great things in there. The window dressing wasn't wonderful, and there were no tiles on the floor, but kids got to do a lot of neat physics in that room. And all I want is a great big space that I get to choreograph where things go, and it has to have full motility. You start putting in, you know, these midget tables, which sinks, and all these other things. Once you start putting in those fixed assets, and they're nailed to the floor, and they are wired, and they are plumbed right in the middle of the room, might be time for me to say that worry or something. My master's is out of the room. I just need to go work on water projects because I don't know how I'm going to do it. I just, it's a difficult year where we're at right now, and I was able to intercept the people from Cortec to prevent the installation in a fixed manner of cabinetry and so forth in my classroom, and that did give me a little bit of breathing room on that. But as it stands, there's so little space between the workstations for the kids, between the tables I have. There's so little space in there, and we've got so much stuff crammed in there.
From a spacing point of view, is opening the room large enough?
No. Unequivocally, no. And the dimensions are wrong. They're making these rooms like shoeboxes. They need to be more on the square than on a rectangle, but the dimensions they're shooting for are rectangular, and it doesn't work in an instructional setting. I currently, when I have to present the content to students in a lecture or discussion type format, I've got 28 desks currently crammed on one end of the room where they sighted a whiteboard, of one tiny little whiteboard, which is inadequate. I had a huge wall of boards, and I was on KUM one day with the rain pouring down onto the chalkboards. But again, most days weren't like that. We had plenty of board space. We sit there, and then we've got this tiny, short distance, like I said, it's about 6 feet then, up to the wall from where the kids' desk end to where the chalkboard is, and then I'm in that space. And then we've got tables around there. That's not ideal, but it's the only configuration I can come up with that will allow me to cram these computers in there and still try to give them some lab experiences with the computer aspect of that. And as far as just the conventional labs, which we haven't even gotten to yet, then you're starting to look at things like wave tables, and those take up a lot of room. I mean, this stuff is just, it's big equipment, it takes up a lot of space, and you don't put it in a rectangular room unless, you know, that rectangle is extremely wide on the narrowest side, if you understand. So that the design is not a good design. There's not a science teacher who knows science who would ever agree to that, and I don't know who planned it, but they weren't teachers. They might have had engineering degrees, but they weren't classroom teachers.
Your concerns, because right now that is the design in the specification. And unless there is, and I'm not sure if this is a change order or what it would entail, you're going to get both of these specific configurations. And it brought up the channel and the change order and all that. And that was the concern that I also had with Ms. Dana, whether or not she was aware that the layout was the she couldn't have been said that if she could accomplish with certain exceptions, she could you're saying you could not.
Because my space requirements are greater than hers because of the kind of equipment we have. And as I said, when you start to bring in the robotics aspect of that, then you need a lot of room. Like, this would be great.
Well, again, I urge you to make your concerns known to the superintendent and the DPW and so on, because presently, that is the current design as they have announced again. The pedestrians are able, and so this building, that's an annex building between annex building and sidewalk. This building to mirror LPD's chemistry and physics classrooms.
Okay, I'll certainly take that to note, and I don't even know where to begin that process. It just seems like we get told at the last, you know, after everything's finished, that's when we're informed as to how things should be, and it seems unfortunate because
I'm not actively engaged.
That's very true, and it's unfortunate because, as I said, though someone has an engineering degree, and they obviously spend a lot of time in science and mathematics classrooms, they're not teachers of that to children in high schools. And there's a big disconnect there. And the schools we all went to looks a lot different than the schools that we should be building today.
I have to applaud you for being modern and taking, I can't even remember what I did in physics.
We didn't have calculator. I know I didn't have a calculator. My sister got one of the first PIs when it came out. I know I didn't have it. I didn't have any of this stuff. In fact, a former student who's an engineer, he graduated from USC, he came back and he said, "Learn this, dude." He said, "I wish you had all this stuff when I was in school." And I said, "No."
I was applauding you for having involved it. I was glad to hear that you're being satisfied from the higher education. I believe you have golden opportunities.
Right. Well, we've had tremendous successes. These don't make the newspaper, but we do have an aerospace engineer who's a graduate of John F. Kennedy High School. We've got kids doing great things, you know. And if anybody needs a pacemaker, we've got a fellow working on a rice grain size pacemaker. I've got three students in nanotechnology. I mean, the list goes on. That never makes the paper. But
there was something about the state of education. What they did say was that education, the teacher, more than anything else, is the primary. A teacher in a poor facility can still be wondered, but a poor teacher in a great facility. So you're obviously a teacher in a poor facility that still can manage the awareness and the interest of our students around the age of the biggest service to our high school children.
Thank you.
Is there any
nothing to
okay, can we go?
No, but I'd like to introduce her to you. You mentioned Miguel Vidal, and she could talk to you about some school issues, and I know you can take them up.
And, Mr. Bones, Mr. Alvin?
F equals MA.
That's right.
Yeah, you lost me there.
Newton's second law. If you come in next week, we'll be allowed.
Okay, then, Ms. Lane, you're going to be excused as a witness, and I still have to admonish you not to discuss your testimony with any of the other witnesses. These proceedings are open.
Okay, I understand.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're subject to the recall by any party.
Thank you.
No, no further testimony, Mr. Hearing Officer. That's going to do for us.
The purchasing agency rest?
I'm sorry?
The purchasing agency rest?
Purchasing agency rep.
Rest.
Oh, rest.
Right.
I thought you talked about a representative in person.
No,
I'm sorry. Yes, we do this.
Okay. The next thing is the interested parties presentation of evidence. Ms. Kang, do you have any witnesses?
That's correct. Thank you.
Okay. Appellant, Mr. Flores, Mr. Alvarez, this is where you get to put on your witnesses. Should you have any?
We have none.
Okay, so you asked as one?
Yes.
But that's just simply maybe you're done presenting that.
We're done.
All right. So we're going to proceed. You want to take the podium, please? Okay. How long do you think we're going to take for closing arguments?
2 minutes.
Mr. Flores?
2 minutes.
Okay.
One.
Okay. So I will proceed into closing statements, and as this is the purchasing agency's motion, Mr. Abrams, you have the floor for your closing statement.
The only thing I really have to say now, now we've heard from these witnesses, is becoming very obvious to me that what our kids are getting to go to that teaching campus of JFK is 40% less than they should be getting. Who knows? they might be getting more than 40% less, but we've had two teachers come in and illustrate and document the situation out there firsthand that it just isn't adequate. And the adequate education of our high school students is paramount. So if we're talking about a paramount interest in educating our children as best we can and asking whether there's a substantial interest in going ahead with the construction of this high school, I say all other considerations are subordinate to that. All other considerations pale in comparison to the need to give those JFK high school students not 40, not 60%, but 100% of what they should be getting. That's what the legislatures talked about when they drafted the bill, the adequate education bill, and that's what we know as parents, taxpayers, and citizens of Guam. We know that. So I don't think there can be any argument that there is a substantial interest. It needs to be confirmed post haste. And let's get that school built. As they say in the military, damn the torpedoes and full speed ahead with this. If there's an appeal out there and that appeal is decided one way or the other, we're lawyers, we're administrators, we know how to deal with that. But we don't want to fiddle with appeals while Rome burns, while the education of our children and the admissibility of our children into good universities all over the United States and all over the world attenuate and suffer and atrophy because we're worried about whether we should go ahead with the building of this high school and or not because of some appeals that are out there. We'll decide these appeals, and I'm sure those appeals will be decided in a fair and just way, but it should not be at the expense of our children's education. Thank you very much.
Ms. Hayden, you have any questions?
Just one point. We echo the statements made by Ms. Abrams. I think there's overwhelming evidence supporting an order affirming the substantial interest and responding to a lot of the statements made by GEF and Inspector Piping or whatnot. That's very relevant. The standards for confirming substantial interest is set forth at GDFK. The discussion regarding prices and square foot comparisons, aside from the fact that they're irrelevant, they're not valid because they haven't negotiated. You're comparing apples to oranges. And so for that reason, I think for purposes of the hearing on the substantial interest, that information must be disregarded. It simply doesn't figure into the case. Thank you.
Mr. Floyd.
Thank you very much. And I have enjoyed being here today. I thought I was going to come here, read a statement, and be gone within 10 minutes. But it's been very educational. As I think about it, I watch these teachers, and I see the banners at JFK. We do need to get a new campus built immediately, as quickly as possible. But we're in this mess because, unfortunately, in fact, it's the reason we have an OPA. Because how sometimes our government operates. And what happened to JFK that we had to leave it in the first place is because we were making quick decisions all the time. Oh, let's just patch that up. Let's just make sure that's done. Let's make sure that's done. And really what happens is nothing correct is getting done. I hear these ladies today talk about there's not enough space, yet we want to go ahead and build an IBC school that's smaller than Okudu, but will have almost twice as many students. That's running too quickly to make the wrong decision again. When you ask where we are getting our information, it's from a preliminary official statement. And when you asked earlier about why is it you're comparing interest costs for a 30-year note over a 20-year note, yes, a 30-year note, you pay more interest because you're paying interest longer. But you know what? When you're building a school that's twice the size almost, but it costs $11 million less, and you have an annual rent that's $1.2 million less, then the school can be amortized over 20 years of debt instead of having to take 30 years for a more expensive, smaller school. So yeah, I will say that maybe it would take a little bit longer to get to the right decision, but that's all really up to us, how quickly we satisfy this. And it's better to take another month, 2 months, to make the right decision than to continue Gunwalb's old way of let's hurry and get it done wrong. Thank you.
Mr. Evans? Mr. Ball?
I say let's hurry and get it done right. These comments about the other school that that this is supposed to mirror having wrong size, those are correctable, right? And it's good that it came out. And for sure, the purchasing agency is going to take all of what we heard today into account and rectify these. And if they go ahead with it without doing that, they'll do it over my dead body. I would never allow that school to be built if there's anything that I could do as a member of the Attorney General's staff and legal counsel for the Department of Public Works. And one of the very first things I'm going to do is meet with the Director of Public Works, Larry Paris, and make absolutely certain that whatever chemistry labs and physics labs that result from this new high school, no matter who builds it, are big square rooms that make this lady and the one before her, referring to the last two witnesses, very comfortable giving our students the kind of education she needs to give them with the physical dimensions that are required to do so. And I think it's been very beneficial today. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, now the last item, okay, that matter we have to discuss, are the evidentiary visits. Now, the purchasing agency has submitted exhibits 1 through 10 for our consideration. Does the appellant have any objections to the admission of those exhibits for our consideration?
I'm not aware of what they are. Those ones that were on the desks?
No, those were filed with the record. Did you serve a copy of those exhibits, Mr. Edmonds?
Well, Mr. Edmonds, yes.
Yeah.
Well, then Mr. Raymond has not objected, so I assume that we have no objection.
No objection. Okay, so they're going to be admitted, and they will be considered. I note that the appellant has not filed any exhibits other than their response to the motions. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, that includes this, right? This is our response.
Well,
those are testimony.
Yeah, your testimony, Mr. Abrams is saying you object to that being admitted. Okay, so we need copies of that document.
Okay.
We'll also serve on the, we'll also give copies to the other parties. That will also certainly be considered. So all the, are there any other documents that you'd like us to consider?
No.
Of course?
No.
Okay, good enough. Okay. All right. Just a reminder, pre-hearing conference will be scheduled for the 9th of November at 9 a.m. I know this will be submitted today, and the public auditor will take the motion to confirm the San Francisco advisement, and we will issue any written decision on that shortly. Okay, any other matters? If not, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going off the record now at 11:45.
Mr. Abrams, in this time, for on GCIS.